Welcome to The Current, a podcast produced by We Stand for Energy. We Stand for Energy is a community that supports a reliable, affordable, and sustainable energy future for everyone. It is a project of EEI, Edison Electric Institute, the National Trade Association representing U.S. investor-owned electric companies. My name is Brad Viator, Executive Director of External Affairs at EEI, and I'm your host. Today, we have the great fortune of being joined by one of my colleagues at the Edison Electric Institute, Scott Aronson, who is the Vice President of Security and Preparedness. And I'm just going to go through a series of questions with Scott and get a little bit of his perspective and learn more about what the electric power industry is doing to deal with the COVID-19 crisis. How do electric companies prepare for emergencies in a general way?
Yeah, hey, Brad, it's really good to join you remote, as all of us are. So, and maybe I'll even talk less generally, I'll talk a little pandemic too. It turns out, and I just find this interesting, that much of the industry's continuity planning is actually rooted in pandemic. And when you think about it, it makes sense. Pandemics pose a really interesting thought exercise. If I don't have access to certain people, certain facilities, certain materials, certain supply chains, certain equipment, but I have to remain operational, what do I do? And so that pandemic planning, that continuity planning is rooted in pandemics going way back into decades, but really the last 20 years or so when you go to SARS and MERS, avian flu, swine flu. The difference is all of those theoretical pandemics never actually made it to North America. COVID-19, of course, did. And so that distinction, it turns out that the details of a pandemic really matter. The foundation of our continuity planning is terrific, but you have to acknowledge that in this case, you've got people who are contagious and asymptomatic for up to 10 days. And that sort of unique attribute of this virus changes some of the things that you might do to prepare for keeping the lights on and the gas flowing under these extraordinary circumstances.
Interesting. So when you dig into that and when you think about that and talk about the experiences on the ground, you know, what is the industry doing to deal with workforce reduction, to deal with social distancing, as you've got employees who are at facilities that are critical, right? The lights have to stay on. So what are you seeing happen across the industry and what sort of preparations being done to deal with this current pretty crazy threat we're facing?
Yeah, so let me talk about a couple of things on this one. So the first thing I would say is frontline electric company employees do not have the luxury of being able to work from home. Now, there are people within the electric power sector who absolutely are more on the business side, but what we're talking about are those people whose job is to keep the lights on and the gas flowing. And so narrowing the number of employees that we are looking to take care of so that they can do that extraordinarily important work. I tell people all the time, we are a critical infrastructure sector, and that's not just a phrase that we like to use to feel important. We are critical to national security. We are critical to the health and safety of the communities that we serve. So we have to keep those lights on and the gas flowing. I talked a minute ago about how so much of our continuity planning is rooted in pandemics. Continuity planning in general is how do we do our job in a degraded state? And so the degraded state that we find ourselves in right now is with a reduction in workforce and with certain challenges to keeping the most critical facilities operational. So things like generation facilities, things like control centers, those employees who do emergency repair work, whether it's lines down or gas leaks. And so by narrowing it to those mission essential workers, now we have a universe of people who we understand what their jobs are. We understand the importance of keeping them in the fight. And we have a manageable universe of people that we can supply with personal protective equipment, or that we can have tested so that they can continue to do their jobs and not contaminate each other. Right now, as you can tell, the lights are still on, the gas is still flowing. we have the resources that we need for the most part to remain operational, but supply chains are being strained. More people are testing positive. And so that is changing the way that we have to operate. So those teams are looking at control center continuity, generation facility continuity, supply chain challenges, how we might execute mutual assistance, that is emergency response after a natural disaster, and also looking at how we access and move around in controlled or quarantined environments.
A lot of the audience of our podcast are state and local elected officials. Can you talk a little bit about the opportunities for coordination and conversation between the Electric Subsector Coordinating Council, the electric companies in general, and state and local officials?
That's a really important question. Thanks, Brad. Yeah, so anybody who has lived through a FEMA-managed emergency understands that the federal government looks at all emergencies as federally supported, state managed, and locally executed. And I think that's a really important way to handle an emergency. You want to give authority to the smallest entity possible so that they can make informed decisions and provide resources and prioritize according to their needs in their footprint or their service territory. The challenge comes, that works really effectively with storms, where it's regional, where it's fairly localized, where most of the country is not impacted and can support those who are. The challenge with a pandemic is, by definition, it's global. It is hitting all of us, maybe not simultaneously, but it is hitting all of us, and we are all having to take action. And so I think that relationship between the federal government's support, but the state and local government's responsibility and authority to manage and execute the response is critical. And where I think electric companies and the private sector more generally can come in is as a nexus. I know the state and local governments work with the federal government all the time. As recipients of some of that support, critical infrastructure providers are in a unique position to be able to work between and among all of the different units of government. And so just to maybe make it specific, if you take that federally supported, one of the ways that the federal government right now, the Department of Homeland Security's Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, is handling things is they have developed guidance for essential critical infrastructure workers, and that's something that's being updated on a regular basis. This ECIW construct is helping the state and local governments who have some of these resources or who are procuring some of these resources, like testing, like supplies, like personal protective equipment. The federal government is helping to identify where it is and helping to demonstrate that there are certain critical infrastructure sectors who are apex industries. All of the others rely on us, electricity being one of them.
Thanks, Scott. You raise a great point. I believe we're up to 31 states having implemented this Department of Homeland Security guidance on defining essential workforce in their disaster orders. I think that's helpful, and the hope is that we expand all 50 states. How can governors, in particular, make sure they have the appropriate exemptions for energy workers with respect to shelter in place orders? Like, what's the scenario that we want to make sure states are prepared for and able to deal with?
Yeah, so let me maybe say two things with respect to those mission essential critical infrastructure workers and that access, that set of access and movement issues. First of all, I want to be very clear. First responders and frontline hospital workers are the priority, period. I think as this has evolved, the critical infrastructure sectors, and I can speak specifically about electric, have not wanted to take scarce resources away from those heroes. But as everybody understands, hospitals and ventilators and first responders don't work particularly effectively without electricity. And there's also other sort of societal challenges that arise when the power isn't on. So I think everybody recognizes that we have to do all we can to keep those mission essential electric infrastructure workers in the fight. That goes two directions. One is, can we move between and among states or cities or even internationally as we see Canadians needing to come over the border to support some of us, or vice versa, going the other direction to support this North American grid. The other direction that it goes is how we operate in people's homes or in customer or community facing jobs where we might come in contact with the public. So we have been pushing, and this is EEI specifically, we have been pushing safety messaging to the general public. Let our people do their jobs. Please, we appreciate that you appreciate the workers who are keeping the lights on and the gas flowing, but don't approach those workers while they're doing their jobs. We need to keep these people safe and healthy. And so I think governors, if they can continue to apply that DHS CISA guidance about who can move freely and make that those mission essential electric company workers, and if they can help to publicize the importance of physical distancing and not approaching these essential workers who are highly skilled and hard to replace so that we can keep them healthy and doing their jobs, that would be extraordinary.
And when you talk about those mission essential critical infrastructure workers, what sort of roles are we talking about?
Yeah, great question also. So let's be clear about a couple of things. There's a maxim in continuity planning where everybody is important, but not everybody is essential. When I'm talking about essential workers, I am talking about explicitly those people who are in control centers, which are the nerve center of the transmission and distribution of electricity. Generation facilities, again, those people who work in those facilities that are making the electricity, and the emergency repair workers who are dealing with either natural hazards or mutual assistance to restore power, gas leaks, and things like that to keep the public safe, and the work that has to be done ahead of storm season. We're getting into the Midwest spring tornado season, and the hurricane season and wildfire season is not far behind that. And so there is a lot of important work that this industry does, particularly in the springtime, to get ready for those. And so I would posit that every state and local official that is listening to this wants to make sure that the energy grid is as prepared as possible for the storm season and wildfire season, so that if there is an incident, if there is a natural disaster, we are better prepared to respond and recover and restore as quickly as possible.
Thanks, Scott Aronson, for providing an in-depth look at what's going on in the electric sector. And thanks to everyone who tuned in to this edition of the We Stand for Energy podcast, The Current. We hope that you found this to be an informative 15 minutes, and we look forward to bringing you additional expert insights about the intersection of energy policy and COVID-19. For more information on how the electric sector is responding to the COVID-19 crisis, visit www.eei.org. Thank you.